Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Monica Lindstrom in today for Pamela Hughes. Thank you for being here, Monica.
Thank you.
We kick the 10 o'clock hour off with taking a look ahead at the November election here in Arizona. Yes, you'll have a variety of, obviously, all of your congressmen, your representatives up for election. We have a Senate race going on, a governor's race, some things a lot of people are looking at. But also there's going to be a couple of ballot initiatives, two of them specifically that deal with education. And this is coming out of a pretty amazing year in the state of Arizona where we had a teacher strike, hashtag Red for Ed. You've got a governor and the challengers to the governor all claiming to be the education governors or education politicians, whatever it might be. So we wanted to go over and let you know a little bit about the two things that you are going to be seeing on the ballot. Now, the first one has to do with the Empowerment Scholarship Account Program. Do you think everybody's familiar with that?
No.
This is the plan, if you will, that would allow parents to basically like a voucher program. So you could take your tax dollars and use it towards private school tuition or education expenses. It doesn't necessarily go to the public school down the street.
Right.
There are people that think that's awesome, that it means more choice for parents. There's others that say it eviscerates the public school system. So it's been they've been battling about it in court. And it is going to be on the ballot. Now, it has not gone into effect. Per a judge, it is on hold until the outcome of this
case.
Ballot initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and if you vote yes in November, it means you want your dollars to go with your kid, regardless of what school you send them to—private, public, charter, whatever. If you vote no, you want to get rid of this program. So that's going to be something that. It's a little bit in the weeds, mm-hmm. I think, but is very important to some people out there.
Yeah, and especially if you're thinking of sending your kiddos to private school and they're in public school now, you definitely want to pay attention.
Because the argument is you pay double.
Yeah, and Bruce, you mentioned in the weeds and how if you vote yes or you vote no, I want to let people know you have to read it very carefully because it could end up being a negative. So if you vote yes, you're pulling it. If you vote no, it's staying in place or vice versa. So just make sure when you get that documentation in the mail that you actually read it so you know in case it's the opposite.
And as of right now, the group is called Save Our Schools Arizona that got it all, they got mm-hmm. the signatures needed. Mm-hmm. They are anti-voucher.
Absolutely. They want the money to stay with the public schools.
And so the way the ballot initiative reads right now, a no vote is what they want.
Correct.
No vouchers. Yes. Yes vouchers.
You got it.
Okay. The other thing that is going to be on the ballot is the one that I would say is more directly tied to the Red for Ed program.
Yeah, this is what you would call the Invest for Ed movement, the hashtag Invest for Ed. And here's what's on the ballot.
Here's what will go on the ballot as the Invest in Education Act. It will change the definition of a teacher to cover support staff and other school workers. 60% of the funding will go to non-administrative salaries, and 40% of it will go to the Classroom Site Fund, which will go directly into classrooms for materials and maintenance.
Again, there's very few people out there that I think fundamentally disagree with this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. The devil is in the details. And the concern, and I think it's a valid concern, especially in the state of Arizona, is that for this ballot initiative to pass, if you vote for it, you're voting to raise taxes.
Not for everybody, but just for Arizona's highest earners. So basically, it would start at if you have an individual income of $250,000, then your tax rate will go from 4.9, I think, to 8.6 or something like that.
Right.
And then if your family combined income is over 500,000, then that increases as well. So it's not your overall tax rate, but you would be doubling the taxes that would go towards this.
I guess on some level, it's popular to say tax the rich.
Yes.
You know, and
it's very trendy.
It's a very trendy thing to do. Take somebody else's money.
Uh-huh.
I have a fundamental problem with this. It's not going to affect me, sadly enough. Okay. I really wish I was telling you my tax rate was going to go up. But if you believe in how important education is, if you believe that teachers and support staff and classrooms need more money, then why aren't you willing to pay for it?
Why is it
somebody else has to pay for this thing that you believe in so badly? If you don't have skin in the game, I think that's where part of this problem has been all along, is where you can always pass it off on to somebody else. And I'm not convinced that we're there yet. I don't think the majority of Arizonans would vote to raise their own taxes for it to go to education. I don't know anyone who's ever won an election by saying, I'm going to raise your taxes. Like, I just can't find an example of it.
Mm-mm.
We are for lower tax. Count me as one of them. I'm for lower taxes all the time for all reasons. I'm perfectly okay with whatever the impact of that is. You have to close a library. There isn't enough funding for schools. Rose has potholes. I'm fine with it. Lower taxes. I'm consistent. It's not like, well, yeah, but that one thing I like, spend money on that. No, take all of it. I'm fine with it. I don't expect or need government to take care of me in any way, shape, or form. But if you believe in this, why isn't it raise taxes on everybody? You see, so I'm a little wary of, and this will put me on Governor Ducey's side, I guess, that this Red for Ed thing is just a tax the rich argument. Because if it was truly about investing in education, well, shouldn't we all invest in education?
And Governor Ducey came out and he said that the entire Red for Ed movement, the march down to the Capitol, that the leaders behind that and the organizers, it wasn't about the teacher pay. It was about raising the taxes to get more money overall.
Now, I don't know if I buy that.
Maybe
that may be a byproduct of it, but I don't think that was the gist of it.
It might have been the primary goal for the leaders or organizers, but I think the teachers, the ones with boots on the ground, the ones that were actually walking, they believed it was for teacher pay. And it did do some good, because Ducey turned around and he raised his little puny raise of, 2% over so many years up to the 20%.
20 by 20, 20 or whatever.
So it
that
made
thing
a
was.
Difference.
Here's another argument. I'm going to keep making arguments against this one, because as of right now, I'm
Which
a no.
one? The invest
I'm a
in
no.
ed?
Yeah, I'm a no on that one. It's not that the state of Arizona doesn't have the money. It's that the state of Arizona chooses not to spend it in education. This is about an allocation of resources. This is about an allocation of funds. So as opposed to holding your state lawmakers accountable, as opposed to holding your governor accountable and saying, we want you to spend more of the existing tax dollars mm-hmm. in education and less in whatever other area. It's a huge budget.
Right.
We say we need to go and take more money from those people over there to supplement this and allow the state of Arizona and the lawmakers to continue to skirt the issue and say, well, as long as we don't have to take anything away from anybody, we're fine with it. But we don't want to have to make the tough call.
I like how you said that it's a way of kind of pushing the responsibility, not holding those that have the power to try to adjust this accountable, not wanting to work too hard to do that, but to say, hey, let's just go get the money somewhere else.
We build more prisons and schools. The money is there. It's where you choose to spend it. We spend money in the state of Arizona on a variety of things. You may agree with it or you don't agree with it, but this is how a budget comes together. These are the things. My argument is that if education were as important as everybody says it is, we'd be spending more money on education. But the reality is, when push comes to shove, the people that you've elected to go to the state capitol don't think education's at the top of the list, and whoever contributed to their campaign or whoever voted for them wants A, B, and C before you ever get to education. So therefore, it's always a smaller and smaller slice of the pie. So this could solve itself. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm just saying, if it was so damn important, why wouldn't they do it? Why haven't they done it up until now? They choose not to. And this initiative allows them to continue to not do something about it. And I don't trust them to take the money and spend it, just like every other time we've created alternative revenue. And amazingly, it never gets to where it's supposed to go. I at least think they're all a bunch of crooks and liars. So we've seen a lot of court cases pitting businesses and a business owner's rights or their religious beliefs against customers. We have a case here in Arizona that I think it goes to show where this is headed. And really, how far are you comfortable with it going? We'll talk to you about the latest, well, the latest business that wants to refuse service to people they don't agree with religiously. That's coming up right after Bob McClay checks in with our top stories.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So, we've heard about the cases. Heck, it's gone to the Supreme Court. Does a wedding cake baker or maker, I don't know what the... should they be compelled or forced to make a cake for example, a wedding of a gay couple and do a flower arrangement for it or whatever? And it has led to a broader discussion. Let's get out of the world of cakes, if you will, because right here in the state of Arizona, we have a case that's going in front of the Arizona Supreme Court, which may make its way to the United States Supreme Court, that is making the argument and making it in an area that it had never dawned on me, Monica, and you being an attorney, this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, you might have heard of the Brush and Nib Studio. It is a studio that designs wedding invitations, party invitations. It sells your typical mass-produced invitations that you might find at any Hallmark store or an Office Max or Office Depot. Mm-hmm. But it also creates things from their own mind. They're artists. And it came to their attention that there was a LGBTQ couple that came in and they wanted this agency, this studio, to create wedding invitations for them and for the gay wedding. And the studio didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And
so this is like the cake argument.
Absolutely. Almost the same as the cake argument. And so this went up to the Arizona Court of Appeals. And the Arizona Court of Appeals said, hey, look, we have a law here in Phoenix and other cities, mm-hmm. not a state
not
law,
state,
but other cities that say under the public accommodations law, if you're holding your services out to everybody, you can't withhold them from someone just because they're gay.
Is that a protected class?
Under
some
of the city statutes, yes.
So you couldn't say because of your skin color, because of your religion, or because of your sexual orientation.
Right.
An example.
The city of Phoenix has a very broad public accommodations law that covers a lot more than what the federal laws or what the overall state laws. So this came from a Phoenix ordinance. Well, what's interesting about this is that the law firm representing them is a Christian law firm.
Which I'd never heard that terminology before.
Neither had I.
I assume there's plenty of attorneys that are Christians
Absolutely.
Or judges or whatever, but I never heard them designated as such.
Me either. And that's why this caught my attention is because we know about the Brush and Nib case because the Supreme Court had the Baker case. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court actually has another case coming down the pipelines that's making its way to it to decide the religious freedom and the religious beliefs versus...
Where's that line?
Yeah, exactly. LGBTQ. You know, what can you believe, what not? So now you've got a law firm that is representing these people, of course, but it caught my attention because now you're thinking it's not just about people making cakes and designing invitations.
Could a law firm?
That's right.
Could a law firm refuse to take a client? Could a doctor refuse to see someone because of a fervently held religious belief?
Because they're gay or they're lesbian, something like that. Can a doctor decide
but where
the same
does that
thing?
Stop? Or because they're black?
Right. Well,
or because they're Jewish.
We know that you can't do that under the public accommodations law because that's your race and your religion, your national origin. But your sexual status, your sexual orientation, that's not entirely a protected class yet, only in Phoenix, Tempe, and some other areas. So this is a question that's important not only for the wedding, the people that are involved in preparing for weddings, mm-hmm. but also any service provider out there.
Well, I was going to say, what service provider out there then would not be able to deny people based on, and by the way, do they have to admit it? Based on what you think their sexual orientation is? Do you get to make that judgment? I don't know. They seemed a little gay to me.
Right.
Therefore, I'm not going to sell them a sandwich.
Yeah. Someone might use that as an excuse, or they might refuse service to somebody and kick them out. And then that person says, why are you doing this? Well, because we don't like flamers in here or something
right.
like that. Well, then there's a lawsuit right there.
Because I think we can acknowledge the no shirt, no shoes,
no service.
But that is widely, as long as it's evenly applied to mm-hmm. everybody. But the picking and choosing of who you choose to serve, using your religion. You know, and I make no bones about it. I have a problem, fundamental problem, and enjoy making fun of. Let's get that out of the way. People who call themselves fervently religious and read the Bible and come away with it with God hates gays. That's what you got out of the Bible? Really? You read the whole Bible and that's the part you're going to do it. I have a fundamental problem and enjoy making fun of hypocrites like that. That doesn't bother me in the slightest. Deal with it, okay? You're not going to change my mind. But I think this starts down the slippery slope. And
yes,
isn't this what the Supreme Court is concerned about on some level?
Well, you would hope so.
At what time, then, does everybody get to say, I can make up my own religion and say my religion says I don't have to deal with blank.
Yeah.
But I want all the same protections of the law of having a business and all this, that, and the other. I just want the benefits. I don't want any of the other side.
Well, the Supreme Court sidestepped the issue this summer, but they should be taking it up this year.
Okay. It'll be interesting, and that'll be an interesting case to follow. But you can see, would a law firm be able to turn you down like that?
Yeah. Something you never thought of.
Jim Sharp's texting me in the middle. Look at that. Sending me a big...
Doesn't he know you're on air?
Yeah. He wants to be in here. Jim, sorry. I didn't get to it in time. So we've had a lot more dust storms and haboobs than lately, haven't we?
Yes,
they used to happen every once in a while. They're happening all the time. We have a climatologist on to explain why are there so many dust storms. That's coming up next.
Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I think it's fair to say it's been a bit of an odd week in Arizona weather. We don't normally have kind of storms every day. And something I noticed, I've lived here the majority of my life. And yes, we've had dust storms. We only started calling them haboobs a couple years ago.
It's a cool name.
Okay. But we just call them dust storms. We had them from time to time, but they didn't strike me as happening as often as they are. Is there something going on out there? Well, gosh darn it, I need an expert to help me figure it out. And joining us right now on our KTAR Newsmaker line is ASU climatologist Randy Cervini. Randy, how are you today?
Hey, I'm fine.
So is it my imagination? Is this confirmation bias? Are there more haboobs or dust storms than before?
No. But there are definitely more haboobs that are being photographed and being watched by helicopters and being chased by storm chasers.
Okay.
And getting their pictures all over the papers and all over the TV.
Each one gets its picture. We are seeing them
a lot more than we used to.
Okay, fair enough. Now, it is relatively unique to this part of the country that we get these dust storms 10,000 feet high,
aren't
all these miles
the
across.
Are we the only ones
I don't know.
In the country?
Are we the only ones that get dust storms like this?
We get more than anybody else, but Texas has had some. Oklahoma has had some, particularly when they are under very severe droughts. They'll have the soil dry up. I mean, simply a haboob, a dust storm is simply caused by when the wind whips up the dried out soil and lifts it up into the air.
Sure.
And so you need to have a lot of good storms, but you also need to have a lot of dried up ground to be able to create these dust storms.
Well, you mentioned that severe drought, and if I understand correctly, I pay attention to things like water. I'm always fascinated by that in the state of Arizona, that we are in a severe drought, even despite some of the rain we've had recently. And that is really kind of at the root of this, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Keep in mind, the first part of the monsoon is always dry. So we don't have yet enough moisture to create the massive amounts of rain that we will get later on in July and in August. So what we have happen now is these storms are dying out. They'll put out the wind and not so much rain. So the first part of the monsoon, we see a lot more of these dust storms. That will decrease as we get into July and the rest of July and into August.
We're talking to ASU climatologist Randy Cervini. And Randy, you talk about at the beginning of the monsoon season, it's dusty. I'm wondering, what does the rest of our season have in store for us? Are we going to get a lot of that rain that you mentioned, and will it make a difference with these?
Actually, according to the people that do this for a living, though, the long-range forecasters for the National Weather Service, they are saying yes, that one, this is going to be a wetter monsoon than what we've seen. The next month, they're saying, should have above normal precipitation. And two, that's going to make somewhat of a dent in the drought that we have. So we can look forward to two really nice results here. We're going to start seeing the rain, more rains over the next few weeks, and that's going to help the drought.
Yeah. I, again, and part of this, again, I'll acknowledge might be some confirmation bias. Again, ASU climatologist Randy Cervini with us right now. It strikes me that, I'll use the term weather patterns or things, they tend to be changing a little bit. I seem to remember things like monsoon season, intensity of storms. Is that just weather is always changing, or are we seeing some general trends?
Well, weather is always changing, definitely. The monsoon is one of the hardest things that we have to forecast.
Okay.
Because it's related to surface heating for the most part. And trying to figure out exactly where storms are going to take place and exactly how they're going to move is incredibly difficult, even for our most pronounced computer models today. The analogy I like to use, it's similar to boiling a pan of water. We know that the water is going to boil in the pan, but where exactly is the first bubbles going to appear? It's chaotic, and our weather systems, because they're based off of hot air, very much the same way. There's a lot of chaos, and trying to pick exactly where the storms are going to attack on a given day is still very much an art as well as somewhat of a science.
Yeah. Randy, thank you so much for your time today. We sincerely appreciate it. That's ASU climatologist Randy Cervini as we talk about haboobs, dust storms, maybe not more prevalent, but we are seeing them more often. We've got the cameras in the air. You see them coming from miles away.
Those are some
they look fantastic, don't
pictures,
they?
Pictures, yes.
You know, I also heard something, and this is interesting, and anyone who's lived in the Valley or in Arizona for a while knows. Another, the drought is part of it. But also, we have more dry land than we did. Here's why I mean that. When you used to drive between Tucson and Phoenix, and I used to make that drive a lot, okay? On both sides of the freeway, there used to be crops.
Yeah.
It used to be green.
Okay.
They were growing alfalfa.
Yeah.
They were growing cotton. You drive down there now, and it's not, for a couple of reasons. One, yes, there's a drought, but also the water. This gets into water rights. For some of these farmers, they make more money selling the water under the ground than they can with the crops.
So they're selling the water instead of using their own water for the crops.
To put plants, which then hold the topsoil in. So now when you just have dirt and the wind comes, you have a lot more available dirt, if you will, to throw itself up in the air. You think about that. Because I remember, you used to drive between, you guys, mm-hmm. Some of you are going to go, that's BS. You used to get by like Casa Grande where the outlet malls are now. And it was green on both sides of the freeway. They were growing things. You drive down along there now, it's dirt. It's just dirt. It's not desert, you know, like we think of mm-hmm. with cactus and mm-hmm. Palo Verde yeah. trees. It's formerly plowed fields and dirt. And then the wind comes whipping up. Then you have drought conditions where it's so dry. And then you get this wall of dirt moving towards you. But maybe the good news is, according to Randy Cervini, we're going to see a little more moisture. And,
right.
And this is one of the places where we're fine with a little rain, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I'm bring it. Bring
right?
It. Yes.
We're okay with that. We went 100-something days without rain. We're okay with a little bit of rain.
Rain.
We need it. And certainly farmers need it. The aquifer needs it. And if you understand anything about water and water rights in Arizona, it's important that we need water.
You know, my kiddo in the car the other day, he said, Mommy, why do we need rain? And I had to explain, well, it's been over 100 days, buddy. We need it for our plants.
Yeah. But there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, water's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
Think about that. And it's only going to get more expensive.
This month, KTAR News 92.3 FM is teaming up with Pacifico to discover Arizona. This week's destination is the Grand Canyon. Just text AZ to 411-923 for your chance to win a two-day trip on the Grand Canyon Railway, complete with entertainment, exploration time, breakfast, and dinner, and a two-night stay in Williams.
Oh, that's nice. I'm going to the Grand Canyon this weekend. Go check it out.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah. It's going to rain. Speaking of that.
Love rain.
Hey, I see movies, so you don't have to. Got a couple of them out in theaters. I'm going to be telling you about some new movie releases coming up next right here on Arizona's News Station.
Bruce tells you what you need to see and what you can most definitely skip at the theater this week. It's Bruce St. James.
At the movies. All right, Remember, I see movies so that, well, except for the scary ones, so that you don't have to. I don't see scary movies. No, not even that one you just thought of. I don't see scary movies.
It.
Never seen it. Mm-hmm. No idea. Won't walk past the posters in the movie theater. I divert my eyes. Okay? Don't want to know. We got some movies opening up. One of them actually opens today. One of them opened last week, but I wasn't around to tell you about it, so I'll give you a quick one for that. The first one, the one opening up today, stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It is another disaster flick. It's called Skyscraper.
So we lit this entire building on fire knowing that you would take the most valuable thing in this world to you and run.
And this plan worked.
Not yet it hasn't. We're going to get both to what he came here for.
As soon as he has to drive, he'll kill us both.
Maybe. He is my daughter. Her life is what matters to me, not mine. Now I'm taking that drive to the roof. You could either be attached to it or not.
All right. So what's the plan?
I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. I like this movie better when it's called Die Hard, I guess we'd say. It is exactly what you think it is. It is every disaster movie cliche thrown together in an hour and 45 minutes.
Sounds like fun.
Every fingernail catch, every split second explosion. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's exactly what he is. I was laughing at parts that I don't think they meant me to laugh at because it's just so ridiculous. And it has a chance to be a good movie, but not when it's, I used to make fun of the TV show 24 like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, okay, why does everything have to be like, it has to get right down to the clock ticks down to one and you pull the wire and the bomb doesn't go off. Like everything doesn't have to be to the 10th of the second. Like you're not creating drama. You are manufacturing this completely bizarre world where you manage to escape death 100 times by a hair width. It's ridiculous. I know there are people that will like it. They call these popcorn flicks. You go there, you eat popcorn. Yeah, it's air-conditioned, fine, whatever. You'll forget it the minute you walk out of it. The movie's called Skyscraper. Dwayne Johnson, Neve Campbell, and a variety of others. The story's irrelevant, right? Because the story doesn't make any sense anyway, so yeah. Don't worry. It's a big skyscraper that, he basically has to escape from, and there are, he did everything except say yippee-ki-yay in it. Okay.
Well, Die Hard was good.
Yeah. On the 1 to 5 scale, I gave Skyscraper a 2 out of 5. 2 out of 5. All right. The other movie, it actually opened last week, but I did want to touch on it because I got a chance to see it, and it's pretty interesting. It's a documentary about the life and death of Whitney Houston. It's called Whitney.
Nobody could touch Whitney as far as singing. They said, Mom, she taught Whitney everything she knew about how to use that voice.
You had 3 places to sing from.
Heart, mind, guts. She learned them all.
All of the things coming at her, she just wanted to escape the pressure.
I will acknowledge that because of the relationship and the music business and being around Whitney Houston, maybe this movie means more to me than other people. I'll acknowledge that. I'd met Whitney on many occasions, been around her, seen her, saw the decline. This is a 2-hour documentary, and I actually looked at my phone because it's about 1 hour of this sweet, innocent little girl. This movie is told in Whitney's voice, in Bobby Brown's voice, Sissy Houston, her mom, Clive Davis, the people that were around her. This is not narrated. It's told by the people. And you start with, and you're reminded of, what a special, unique, amazing woman and talent Whitney Houston was. The Pepsi commercials, you know, the first big hits, you know, the Grammys, the records that she set. The Star Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right.
It was an amazing, I won't ruin it. There's a great story behind that and how that came to be. Oh. And that there's a whole unique story that was very Whitney. Okay. And then at about the 1 hour mark, it starts going down the other path. Mm. It starts with drugs. It starts with alcohol. It starts with self-destructive behavior. It starts with the relationship with Bobby Brown and cutting off other people. It starts with her father, who comes across like Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's father in this, controlling her. He was a manager and cutting out other people and them knowing that she had a problem, but nobody wanted to stop this gravy train. It's really a tale of two movies. The first half and the music, and it makes you smile. It gives you goosebumps. And the second half is an American tragedy of watching this woman who at times wanted to get better and wanted to change the course, and at other times just couldn't and didn't have anybody around her that wanted to help her out. I have some friends that are in this film as well, some of the people from the record label. And again, I had opportunity to be around Whitney on more than one occasion. And I'd like to think I saw Whitney like at the peak.
Yeah.
And I also saw some of Whitney's final performances and really saw kind of how far she sunk. And this documentary captures all of it. The rise, the peak, and the fall. It's just called Whitney. Easy to remember. And on the 1 to 5 scale, I gave Whitney a 4 out of 5. Really well done documentary. It'll remind you of how great she is, and it'll remind you of what a tragedy it was. Kind of both.
Yeah.
Which a good movie can do.
Yeah.
Skyscraper, 2 out of 5. Whitney, 4 out of 5. There you go. All right? We've got some really good movies coming up in the next couple of weeks. I've already seen them, but I'm not allowed to talk about them. So some really cool movies coming up that I can't wait to tell you about. Check of the headlines on the way. We come right back. Did Congress embarrass themselves yesterday? And by the way, you really have to go away if you're a congressman to embarrass yourself. We have some audio of the Strzok hearing and the ridiculousness happening on both sides of the aisle coming up next on Arizona's News Station.